For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome in, everyone, to another live edition of 410 Sports Talk. I'm Glenn Martin, riding solo for now, as Jimmy is busy taking care of some business, and hopefully I'll get I have DK join us here momentarily, but we do have a guest lined up for a little bit later, which I'm excited about, to continue our draft discussion. We have DraftPlex coming in, so I'm excited about that, but as I'm sure everyone here who's a Ravens fan has seen, there was some pretty big news over a couple hours ago, I believe, is when it dropped. So I wanted to lead with that. So we'll start with the fact that Kyle Van Noy is back in Baltimore, filling a much, it was a need before we saw Clowney sign the 2-year deal with Carolina, and it just became Kyle Van Noy, I think, became even more attractive of a piece to bring back than he even was before that, because the room was looking a little lean, you know, with just having guys like Ajabo and Adafe Owe leading the way with even younger guys behind them, with Tavius Robinson and others. It looked like it could need a veteran added to the room. So it was nice to see Kyle Van Noy is back in Baltimore. In fact, it's a 2-year contract, the terms of which I believe, it's a 2-year, $9 million deal, which, when you compare that to what Clowney got from Carolina, 2 years, $20 million, with some incentives on top of that, that's a steal. And the reason I say that is, look, there's a bunch of reasons why this is a big deal, but I'll start with a few. For the one thing is, he loved being here, and he talked about loving to be here. And I don't know how much this factors into the contract, but I got to imagine it does in some way. When Kyle Van Noy has a pretty big presence when it comes to appearing on other talk shows, he has almost a weekly segment on Pat McAfee going for a little while. I'm not exactly sure the schedule, but I saw him on there constantly. And that's just one of the shows I've seen him on. And so what that does is, every time he's on there, next to his name is that Ravens logo. And I got to imagine that Steve Bisciotti loves seeing that Ravens logo as often as possible in as many places as possible. So that's one thing. Like, he's just good for the team. From an optic stint, bringing more eyes on the team, and he's got a great personality. I think people tend to love listening to what the guy has to say. He's a good storyteller. He's a funny guy. He seems to get along with all the guys in the media, and so it just brings more eyes on the Ravens. So that's one box that I think he certainly checks off. But also, I mentioned, it's a young room behind him, with Adafe Owe really was the leader in that room until Van Noy was brought back from a. He was the most veteran guy in the room, which is kind of crazy when you think of how young Adafe is and how new he is to the game of football. And then behind him, you have David Ajabo, who to this point has played very little football, had dealt with injuries through his first two seasons. And so, yeah, people are projecting and predicting a breakout year. But anything we get from David Ajabo at this point, I mean, let's be honest, I think it's wishful thinking. Even for the most optimistic Ravens fan to think you're going to get a ton of production from Ajabo, when to this point we just haven't seen it. And then Tavius Robinson and Malik Ham after that, again, young guys, they could certainly benefit from the leadership of a guy like Kyle Van Noy. So that's big time. I mentioned the fact that they got him for $4.5 million per year, you know, in comparison to what you saw some of these other guys get. Even Clowney gets $10 million a year. That's pretty special compensation when you think about what the return was last year, him setting a career high in 9 sacks in just 14 games. That's a pretty good return of investment if you can get similar production out of him. And then also what he does is not just, you know, the pass rusher that he brings. I mean, he's 9 sacks last year, like I mentioned, but also he fills that Tyus Bowser role. I think everybody remembers what made Tyus so special here is his ability to drop into coverage, which is really why he was drafted where he was. is that he was more than just a pass rusher, right? I think he had a year where he had what, 3 or 4 interceptions. He's great at dropping into a zone coverage, helping out in the flats, and they just don't have that guy on the roster until now with Kyle Van Noy. He's done that his whole career, so he's more than just a pass rusher. Also had some big run stops last year, particularly on 3rd and 4th and 1, where he was absolutely essential. And so he's just so much more than just a guy who can go out there and possibly get you 9 sacks. He can drop in coverage. He's good against the run. And he also allows guys like Ajabo and Tavius Robinson to not have to take on too many snaps and kind of overload themselves. Now, let these guys stay in a role where they can excel, get some confidence, especially in a case for David Ajabo, where he needs confidence. Because I got to imagine, to this point, he hasn't been able to draw a lot of confidence from what he's done as a Raven on the football field. So this will allow the Ravens to keep him in a role where they know and feel that he can succeed. And hopefully he does, and then he gains some confidence from it. So this checks a lot of boxes when it comes to what the Ravens needed at the edge position. It was starting to really creep up there with offensive linemen as far as the biggest area of concern and biggest opportunity where the Ravens could add. And, man, I mean, that's a big, big get. 2 years. Welcome back to Baltimore, Kyle Van Noy. I know he loves it here, so... man, I'm happy to have this guy back in Baltimore. What's going on, everybody in the chat? Nana, Don C, what's going on? Ravens win. Lisa Ann, appreciate you coming out. Tanja, as always. Tyler, my guy. What's going on, Jamal? I got you, Jamal. He says you got to say what's up. What's up, Jamal Hooper? What's going on, buddy? Dylan, what's going on, buddy? Appreciate you coming out. Katie, my love, appreciate you showing up in the chat. Guys, if you didn't hear when I opened, I have no Jimmy here. I got no DK. But one thing I do have, and I'm very thankful to have him, especially this evening, is our friend Jason Pruitt from DraftFlex. Jason, how you doing this evening?
Good, Glenn. How are you?
Doing well.
Feeling solo.
Yeah. Yeah. A little lonely. It's a little different doing the show by myself as opposed to having Jimmy and DK in the background, but just trying to get by, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I'll fill in the other box for you today.
Shit, certainly appreciate it. So you heard me mention, thanks again for coming out, Jason, of course, from DraftPlex. Guys, if you're unfamiliar with Jason, we've had him on many years now. It's kind of crazy that how long we've kind of known each other. But Jason is and was crowned the most accurate mock drafter in the nation, above all the guys you see on TV like Kuiper and McShay. Oh, and he brought the belt. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. He's got the hardware to prove it. So you're not just talking to any, you know, look, you're not talking to any mock drafter here. You're talking about the best and has the hardware, like I said, to prove it. So thanks again for joining us, Jason. When you saw and heard me talking about Kyle Van Noy being brought back, what did that do anything as far as molding and shaping your thought of what the Ravens need in this upcoming draft?
I mean, I don't know how much it changes. I mean, I think at this point, like whenever you bring somebody back, it's kind of gravy, right? At this point in the, you know, kind of the free agency leading up to the draft, you're kind of filling holes, right? You're kind of protecting yourself if the draft doesn't fall the way you want it to. So if perhaps the Ravens are thinking maybe 30 is not the place for a pass rusher to add to it, mm-hmm. they're kind of covered. I don't know how much it really does impact your overall draft strategy, but you kind of see this as teams, they're trying to cover those bases, right, going into the draft, making sure they're not just having a gaping hole and, you know, or maybe even creating one like the Bills may have done with the Stephon Diggs trade, where it's like mm-hmm. you're kind of almost pigeonholing yourself into, we have to take this position in the first round, and now everybody knows it. So if, you know, if a team kind of behind, I think the Bills are at 28, mm-hmm. is thinking they might want a receiver, that's going to encourage them to probably think, okay, we may need to trade up into early 20s. And for the Bills, they may look at going into the teens. That's a distinct possibility. You look at maybe like a Brian Thomas or something like that. There is probably the target if they can't get A.D. Mitchell down to them. But yeah, for the Ravens, I think they're still in good shape. I don't know how much that does impact, especially your early draft strategy. We've talked about it last time about a pass rusher being a need, but maybe not the top need going in. But of course, you know, the value of the board will dictate who's there and whether you want to take them. So I don't think that just solves it and says, you know, we're off and done. We'll go and look at focus our attention at other positions. But it certainly does make it a little bit of a softer cushion for them if the board doesn't fall in their way.
So it kind of relieves the desperation in case.
Exactly.
Gotcha. It makes sense. Now, do you look at, because you talked about the Bills, which, I mean, man, what a trade. I mean, obviously the headache. I mean, he must have been to take on that kind of dead cap space just to get rid of a guy. Yeah. Means he must have been very unliked in the building.
Yeah, I mean it just seems like they were ready to cut ties based on that. I mean, the return is okay. You know, you're getting, I think, a second round pick. I'd have to go back and look at the compensation, but
next year's second though.
Yeah, exactly. And then Houston turned right around and I think voided the last 3 years of the deal that he had. They accelerated some money to this year. So he's basically playing on a 1 year contract now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it's not even a situation where they're a Houston, at least what I've kind of interpreted that is like they're happy to rent him for a year. And then once he moves on to go somewhere mm-hmm. else, they're going to collect that comp pick and move on.
Yeah, I think they want the most motivated version of Stephon mm-hmm. Diggs, and they figure, well, if he's on a 1 year deal, that's going to certainly incentivize him to play his butt off and hopefully not be the headache he seems to have been in Buffalo. But when you say how they've kind of made it to where everyone in the league knows they have to fill that void of wide receiver, because they didn't just lose him, they lost Gabe Davis. And I think there might've been another one, but the little speedster, is he still there?
I'd have to go back and look at their depth chart. I hadn't looked at it in a couple weeks. I think they had Khalil Shakir.
Yeah, Shakir. That's who I was thinking of.
Okay. A good kind of, you know, probably ceiling of a two. I don't know that we'd put him as their number one. They've got Dalton Kincaid, though. They've got a couple of good tight ends. So you may look at them kind of focusing their offense around that. You know, moving forward, and then maybe that lessens the need, but they've got to get somebody there. Now, the one thing that we didn't talk about as much last time is kind of the depth of this receiver class.
Yeah.
I certainly heard the chatter post show about my opinion of the tackle class and how far that stretches.
Would you watch the comments or was it us?
Oh, no, I watched your guys' show and you alluded to something and I saw it on the comments later, which, you know, I'm not saying anything that's all that different from anybody else in this space who's certainly more connected than I am.
Well, we did a mock and it was the exact amount of tackles you predicted would be drafted in the first round. So,
yeah. And I'm not sitting here guaranteeing that's going to happen. I'm just presenting a scenario that that could come to pass, because the one thing we've learned over the past several years is the value positions. There are not enough offensive linemen to go around. And when you have to get one, even a deep class, yes, that will push them up the board. And yes, teams are going to take them. Offensive line is not a position where you'll say, oh, I'll just wait and get mine in the second round, because they probably won't be there. Mm. Wide receiver, though, I don't know if you're in a position where you have to jump up, because we talked about it last time. Outside of those top three, four guys, mm-hmm. you know, that next 8 to 10 is kind of flavors of ice cream. You go in there, look, what do you like, right? The talent level is going to be very similar. You're not going to get your outright number one, but once you get past the top guys, you never really do. I mean, that's not just for this year. That's in years past. You usually have 2, 3, 4 kind of bona fide potential number one receivers coming out in the draft, which, again, Buffalo needs, which is why there's talk of maybe them needing to jump up. But from a wide receiver standpoint, if they feel comfortable thinking Dalton Kincaid is, you know, target number one, maybe you've got Dawson Knox, maybe you've got Khalil Shakir, maybe they don't want to go and, you know, dump a second or a third round pick to move up that far. You know, they could just go crazy, you know, Sammy Watkins trade style and start trading number ones to go up and get a receiver. But from 28, that's a little bit more difficult of a jump.
That's a jump.
Like 13 to 4, right? So,
well, I mean, those top four, what's the lowest you'll see? I mean, I'm sorry, top three. What would be the lowest you'll see any one of those three getting down to?
The lowest I've seen is Adunze at 9 to the Bears, mostly. Usually you've got Harrison and Neighbors going in some combination of 4, 5, or 6, depending on what where teams are mocking these quarterbacks. And then Adunze usually falls behind Joe Alt at 7 and then Dallas Turner at 8. So that's the Tennessee and
Atlanta, they got to get to the respectively. Top 10.
Yeah. So, and that's no guarantee. Cause like, you know, like in my mock, I was like, well, You've got Harrison going to, I think the first one I put him in the Patriots because I thought, you know, like they may not go for a quarterback. I think they probably are. They may look at trading back into the first round, getting a Bo Nix if he's still there.
Michael
or something
Penix,
like that.
Yeah.
Or Penix. And then I had, you know, Neighbors going to the Cardinals because Harrison had went to the Patriots, right? And then Adunze going to the Giants at six because, you know, what do they want to do with Daniel Jones's contract? And maybe they don't get a chance at one of those four quarterbacks, depending on who trades up. So I could see very much like you almost have to get in the top six to probably guarantee that you probably get one of those, receivers.
And how big is the drop off after those three, like in your opinion?
I think A.D. Mitchell is certainly late first round. I like Brian Thomas probably more than a lot of people do. But even still, like, I don't find a good spot for him until I think in the mock, I put him in 18 to the Bengals. And that's purely dependent on like what they want to do with T. Higgins.
Yeah.
And I just think it's it would be a good fit. And, you know, I really like him as a prospect, but I think, you know, those two, like that, there's some polish with Brian Thomas. I think he could possibly have the highest ceiling of these, the top four receivers. Because, you know, you almost got a finished product, obviously, with Marvin Harrison Jr. And I think Rome Odunze is probably the closest to that. I think Neighbors brings a different element with the speed and the, you know, kind of the run after catch. But I think Brian Thomas, like when I watched him, you know, coming from the Cowboys fan in me, I saw a lot of Dez Bryant type ability in him.
Okay.
And so, and you guys obviously familiar with, you know, later career Dez, but when he was in Dallas early was a force, right?
Problem.
And so,
I remember his punt returning days.
And so I could see Thomas being, you know, again, having maybe the highest ceiling of those. Again, this is all purely based on development, where he goes. Injury, hopefully stays healthy and can kind of grow into the player that you think he can come, which is like all of these guys whenever you draft them. But I think A.D. Mitchell is like right underneath that. I think he can certainly be, develop into a number one. I don't know if he goes to a place and it's like you've got him and like you've got your guy. His best situation might be to go somewhere where they already have kind of an established number one. But he can certainly, you can certainly see like we've seen in Dallas where CeeDee Lamb was drafted, kind of had that number one receiver kind of potential, started there with Amari Cooper. They moved on from Amari Cooper a couple of years later. And then CeeDee Lamb is now maybe one of the top one, two, three receivers, depending on who you like. Right. But after that, then you start getting into a little bit more niche of what kind of receiver do you like? Do you like Xavier Worthy with the 4.21 speed? Do you like kind of the shifty guys like Ricky Pearsall or Malachi Corley, who's a little bit more of the run after catch, kind of a little bit bigger guy that, you know, is open field, kind of a dangerous weapon to have there. You got Xavier Leggett, who's people have likened to Debo Samuel in terms of being that kind of all around weapon. So, I mean, there's a lot of different players there. And we talked about like Keon Coleman, the big target, right?
Yeah.
So if you want one of those, like you can certainly that, but you know.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're going to have to find that role for him, them, and carve that out within your offense. But I think once you get past those top five, I don't know if you have like a bona fide number one, you have a little bit of room to grow, depending on the receiver you take and the role they have in the offense.
Gotcha. Hey, Chad, I want you, I think since it's only me and Jason, I think it will be fun. I already saw their couple names. Jason, what I'll do is I'll hit you with questions and then I'll just sprinkle a name in here and there. If they put a name in, and just quickly give me a little blurb of what you think of them and where you think he'll go. Okay. Because I know a lot of people want to get names out there and we don't always have the opportunity to do so, but tonight being week night, I think is a good opportunity. So I'll start with Ravens Win 16 asks about, what's your take on Kingsley? I know, And of course, the tackle out of BYU. I'm not going to try and say his last name because I'll butcher it. But Jimmy likes him a lot, which is shocking because he doesn't typically like BYU guys being a Utah grad. Yeah. But what's your take on Kingsley? Would it be a value at 30? Do you see him more as a second rounder? What's your take?
Kingsley Suamataia. I watched a video from BYU. They pronounced it correctly. So I wanted to say it correctly this time, last time, because I had trouble with it. I have moved him up to a 1-2 because I do think there's a possibility he goes in the first round. I think a lot of people have started to kind of circle around him at 32 to the Chiefs if they decide to hold there. I could see him maybe going a little bit higher, you know, kind of in the late 20s, depending on, you know, if teams decide to move about. Again, we talked about if they want to come up and get a tackle, maybe somebody drops back depending on, you know, Buffalo offers that or, you know, another team kind of late in the draft is wants to come up and extend some draft capital. But
have they kind of pinned themselves in a similar way that the Bills have, in the sense that is every team going to go, well, the Ravens need a tackle, so I better get ahead of those guys.
It's possible, but again, it's such a hard thing to predict because, you know, you could say that at, you know, this tier, right? Because the Titans are clearly drafting Joe Alt. I can jump above the Titans to get my tackle. But then you've got like the Chargers. Do they want to get a tackle? Because now everybody's saying like there's no way they would draft a receiver. Then I didn't watch the video, but somebody was like, halfway through Jim Harbaugh's response to this question, he realized he doesn't have any receivers. So, you know, it does have a whole lot of, you know, sense that's made there when you're saying, okay, I can look at this team, you know, like there's clear needs, right, that we always think, well, this team is absolutely going there. Then on draft night, they go in the complete opposite direction. Mm-hmm. But you kind of pick on the cues and, you know, I've heard from other people in the, you know, that I've talked to over the course of the several years that, you know, there are teams that obviously look at the mock drafts. They'll, you know, some of them will dismiss them altogether, but secretly they're over here like, but they use it not to like pinpoint a player, but like, what are the other teams looking at? Who are they being connected to? The same way that I was like telling you guys last week, well, the Ravens are working out Jordan Morgan. I mean, this is not, you know, private information. It's publicly accessible from people that show up at these pro days and report on it. But it's just a calculated risk to say, okay, I think I need to use one other asset to get ahead of this team because I think they're going to draft it. You know, sometimes when you're making these trades, you know, I've seen it with the Cowboys. I've watched a lot of behind the scenes stuff where like, and they'll tell these stories on some of their shows, like Jerry Jones is getting teams on the phone to tell them who they're picking, you know, and they're making a deal based on that. Because like, if I'm like looking at a particular player and I know that it's not a need for your team, then let's make a deal because like, I know you're not going to take the guy that I want. Mm-hmm. But again, it's such a need for all these teams to get offensive linemen, tackle, guard, even center. In this draft especially, it's lined up that way where there's going to be a lot of teams that are tackle needy that, you know, need maybe a guy that they can plug in at guard and then maybe later move to tackle. There's three or four guys that they've talked about that. Even at the very top, you think maybe of the top two tackles, probably Joe Alt and Talisi Fuaga, people have talked about, well, Fuaga can move into guard. I think even Jim Nagy on the Senior Bowl said that, you know, like put him with the Bears and he can play guard. And so, I mean, there's a lot of information out there that would support that. But I think going back to your original question, Kingsley Suamataia, I think he's got some development work, but I mean, he's got the athletic ability to slot in a left tackle. You'd live with the growing pains to start because I think you do have a good ceiling there. And I do think he's probably going to go higher than a lot of people probably pegged him. You know, even myself, I was like, he's probably a second round player, but you got to move him up because there's been such smoke connecting him to a Kansas City. And certainly if Kansas City likes him, you know, I don't know how much work Baltimore has done on him. You know, there may be some that may not be out there as much, but you start to hear this in circles as you get closer to the draft, different players that are connected to teams. And it may be nothing. It may be something, right? Because there's so much communication going back and forth between teams that were, you know, like, and I've heard about this before, like somebody puts it on a website. They had a formal meeting at the combine. They had an informal meeting. They may not have informal meetings like, hey, I went to BYU. I was like to watch you last year, and it won't be anything, right? It didn't have anything to do with the draft.
Right.
But it's pinned out as an informal meeting, and then people just start connecting dots, and then you know, we start to assume that these players, they're even interested, and you know, you come to find out later in the draft there was nothing to it. So
yeah, I'm sure there's some misdirection being played around out there as well that you kind of have to account for. But I'm glad that DK has joined us, because I wanted your take on a specific player. I messaged you on Twitter because it got a little bit, it got lively in our group chat when talking about a specific guy. Jimmy absolutely fell in love with this guy. But what's your take on Iowa cornerback Cooper DeJean? Is that how you say his name? Cooper
yeah. DeJean.
Now I'll tell you this, Jimmy loves a multi-sport athlete, and you don't get much more multi-sport than what Cooper's done, especially in high school, where I think he was a four sport athlete and was all American at like three of them or something. Jimmy was mentioning, so I guess the question is he a corner? Will he be playing corner? Can he hold up at corner, or is he a safety?
Great questions. All of the above. I have him currently ranked as a corner. And I think I have him as corner number four behind Arnold, Mitchell, McKinstry, Cooper, right? So Cooper I had there, but I also see him as like, yeah, he's probably a safety, you know? So I think he can play corner. But again, you know, he may be more one of those hybrid type players that, you know, I don't want to call him positionless and just be like a DB, right? But that's kind of what he is, right? Because you think you can move him around a little bit better. I saw, you know, it was kind of after you mentioned that, I was like, let me just look and see what is kind of the prevailing opinion of him. And there's obviously a lot, and you do see this where, you know, the short area quickness, maybe not exactly what you want for like a number one corner. But he is such a great athlete, right? He's a smart player. He makes plays. He's always around the football. He was hurt this past year. So there's maybe a little bit of a discount than perhaps if he would have had a healthy season. You don't know what he could have done, and maybe he boosts himself up. But really, people have been talking about him. You know, he's one of these guys that came in and kind of just blew up early. And then it was like 2 years later is when he finally gets to get drafted. And now everybody's dinging him for, you know, for the injury, for what does he actually play? Is he a better safety, better corner? But it's all very valid, right? You don't know until you get him in there. And somebody, I think it was Dane Brugler, actually likened him to Eric Weddle, which obviously you're going to be very familiar with, being a, you know, me personally, he looks like one of those guys that's going to be around for like 12, 14 years and just be really solid the whole way. But I don't know if you're ever going to get him up to the upper echelon of corners. If he plays there, I think he would be very solid. But I just don't know if that ceiling is there moving from the college level, where I think obviously the game is played differently, to moving to the professional level, where that quickness is really going to come into play. And especially, you know, depending on where he plays, if he's on the outside, I think, you know, I think physically he's obviously can handle that. The quickness is probably where, you know, you may run into a little bit of the trouble. But again, these Iowa guys, they seem to come in the league and, you know, I don't want to say they don't look like much, but some of them, they don't go until the fourth, fifth round. But
like Geno Stone, he was a seventh round pick.
That was who I was going to bring up, because I really liked Geno Stone coming out. Yeah. But he never, like, he got drafted late, and he's kind of bounced around a little bit, but he's been very solid everywhere that he goes. Desmond King, another guy who had that same kind of production in college. Like, I think in his senior year, he had, I don't know how many interceptions, but they ended up going like the fourth, fifth, sixth round, somewhere in there, day three. But he's been able to carve out a pretty nice career for himself. And I think that's a lot of the thing with these Iowa guys. They're just really good football players, and they stick around for a long time, but you never really see those guys, at least on, you know, in the secondary.
Say tight end, they're pretty good.
Yeah, tight end, they're pretty good, right?
Pretty good
offensive linemen, they put a few in the league as well. But those secondary guys, they just seem to be like really solid, you know, like the good locker room type guys, the kind of glue that holds those secondaries together while you have, you know, a little bit more talent one way or the other. But they always seem to be on, you know, making these rosters and playing on Sundays. So no doubt. I don't want to pigeonhole Cooper DeJean like that this early. I do still think he's probably a first round guy, but he's certainly somebody that, depending on what you're looking for, he might slip into the second. I'm not going to say that he's not. I've seen, you know, plenty of players that looked like surefire number one picks based on the tape, and then there's something else to it. You know, you assume the medicals are good. But it's like everything, like we get to this point, it's April, it's 3 weeks away from the draft. We're overanalyzing everything about every player. And, you know, there's like people are shuffling guys up and down the board now. It's like, well, I jumped all over this at the Senior Bowl, but now I'm going back to where I originally had him in tape. And a lot of it's just based on, you know, clicks and stuff like that.
Certainly.
But there is something to be said to actually going back and looking at guys. And, you know, like I do that too, because I'm like, you know, I don't always kind of get the right impression of somebody, but I like to go back and look to see like, why is this guy bumping up? Because there's plenty of information that, you know, is just starting to get out to the people in the media where you start seeing guys start to fall down in these mock drafts or move up in these mock drafts. And it's not because they're always, I'm going back and watching all the tape. They're getting information from other sources. They've got people in the league that are telling them, hey, we got this medical on that. You know, that you get into these circles, you get in these pro days, people start talking. The combine is big. The Senior Bowl is big, where people are communicating with each other, and it starts to get out. You know, it leaks out into the media because, you know, one of these things is like, I don't have any connections in the league, right? I talked to you guys. I talked to a few other people that are in this space too that might be somewhat connected to things.
But oh, we're connected.
Well,
draft.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you guys are connected.
No, I'm just messing.
Yeah, you guys are obviously hanging out with Lamar on the weekends and that kind of thing. You know,
the cookout.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, it's like they start trickling things out, and some of these guys are just building mock drafts based on, I heard this from so and so. They're not actually watching the tape. They may look to see just enough to talk sensibly about it. But at the same time, they're not digging into anything. They're just being told that and kind of basing the information off that. And that's certainly a valid way to do this because it's all kind of entertainment as it is. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't know where Cooper DeJean goes. I think he's certainly a top 40 pick. And yeah. I think if you're picking him in the top 40, you want a starter. And where a team sees him is going to vary from team to team. Somebody may see him as an outside corner. Somebody might think he can play the slot. Somebody might think he's just a deep safety. I don't know. He could end up playing every one of those positions and just be like that Swiss Army knife utility player back there. So we'll find out.
Yeah, I'm hoping we get the first white corner that we've seen in this league in 20 years. Okay, I mean, I'll say it.
I want to mention, though, Riley Moss from Iowa went last year. And it was the same conversation on him. The white corner, is he going to be a corner in the NFL? I looked him up this year because he was like a top 60 player. And I think, I don't remember if I left him out of my top 100, but I was kind of on the fringe of like, I don't know. I think he went to the Broncos, and I think he went in the second round. I don't think he played much this year.
But everybody was like,
well, he's really good. And then it was like, well, Cooper DeJean is even better. And everybody put it, you know, kind of was looking at Cooper DeJean as that first round pick. At the very least, the first round white corner.
I mean, it's been 20 years. I mean, I just want to, you know, just change it up a little bit. Connor says, hey, Glenn, how would you feel about Judon coming back? And what would you give up for him? Love the videos and have a good Friday tomorrow. Appreciate it, Connor. Appreciate the generosity. Appreciate you watching, and of course the super chat as well. I would love to see Judon come back. I think he certainly didn't burn any bridges on his way out. He got paid handsomely to go elsewhere and deserved that contract. The thing I loved about Matt Judon is that is one high motor guy. That guy's motor never turned off. And there's so many players out there that may not have the deepest bag of pass rush moves, but if you just play your ass off, you will make plays. And that's what I loved about Matthew Judon. He just played hard. And look, now he's developed some more bad. You know, look, this is a guy who had 15 and a half sacks last season. This is now only four last year in a truncated season. He didn't play the full year, but he had 12 and a half in 2021 and 15 and a half sacks in 2022. So I very much so think there's still a little bit of juice left and a little bit of gas left in the tank. I would say for compensation, I would say a late round pick would be what I would expect the Ravens to be willing to give up. So yeah, I would say fifth or later would be what I would hope that the Ravens would give up. And yeah, bring him home, bring him back to Baltimore. I miss Matthew Judon. He's a good guy. And also he was in front of the mic almost every game. Like, they love putting that guy in front of the mic doing media. So I think the Ravens would welcome him back as well. Don C, appreciate you as always viewing and appreciate the generosity. He says, "Hey, Glenn, Jimmy, who? You're doing great, brother. Love when Jason Pruitt is on. I'm always learning something new." Absolutely. Appreciate Jason being here. We miss Jimmy. I know you're just kidding. We miss Jimmy, and we're hoping to get him back. But, yeah, Don C., appreciate the comment. You are the man. Appreciate you as always. But I did want to get your take on another guy, that because you mentioned about how guys move up and down. They drop off the board, and then they rise up. And it always goes back to the tape. Well, one guy who's been doing a lot of moving, and I'm glad Malik B put this name in the chat here, and I'm glad he did, because Jackson Powers Johnson, I need to...
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Know what your take is on this guy, because I heard he's now dropped out of the first round when he was in the 20s for a good bit of time. So is he only a center? Because, of course, the Ravens have Tyler Linderbaum. We're good at center. Can he move to guard? And just what's your initial take on Jackson?
Yeah, so when I got into doing this year's kind of study for what I do, it was kind of coming out after the Senior Bowl, and everybody loved him at the Senior Bowl. He was a phenomenon at the Senior Bowl, especially in Cowboys country here where they're looking for a center. And everybody's been on that wave still. Even though there hadn't been, I know they're bringing him in for a visit, but there hadn't been a whole lot connecting them to him in that time. He does have some position flex. I do believe he can play guard. I think this is a situation. And now the one thing I have heard is there may be something medical there, which is why he's dropping, and you're starting to see that. And again, as I mentioned about the information coming out and starting to get into media circles nobody's sharing that openly, because I don't know what it is. I mean, that could be anything. It could be, something that's long, he's fine now, but is he going to play forever? Or is it could be something more serious? It could just be something like, hey, we want to clean this up. Because some of these guys, like, the information is kind of out there. It's not necessarily from, like, combine medicals, but, like, for example, like Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from NC State. Probably, I don't know if he might be somebody Ravens are looking in having – lost Patrick Queen, but like, here's a guy that everybody seems to think has first round tape, or at least certainly top 50 ability, but allegedly has had like double digit surgeries for injuries. And, you know, like a Michael Penix, who's had, a couple of torn ACLs and shoulder injuries and history of that. I don't know what maybe, a potential issue with Jackson Powers Johnson. When I watched the tape based on positional value, I'm not overly surprised if nobody has him in the first round or takes him in the first round, because to be honest, that's one of the things about this center class. It's deep, but there's not a Tyler Linderbaum. And where did you guys take Tyler Linderbaum in the draft?
What first pick, round.
You recall?
22.
Yeah, you took him in 22 in the first round, and he was probably like the quote unquote generational center. And like the only deal was the size and the length. But the ability, the movement skills, I don't see that with these guys this year. And they're in both, I think the top center, positionally is not even a center. I think that's Graham Barton. And people are starting to come, heat up on him again, because he kind of moved down, he played tackle all in college, and it's a projection to put him at center. But I can watch him and say, like, he can play center. And I think he's the best center. But the two guys that have kind of also been hovering, at least in the content that I consume about being first round centers, is Jackson Powers Johnson and Zach Frazier, is the West Virginia. And the only thing, I tend to hear about Zach Frazier is the thing about him breaking his leg and then being able to walk off the field so his team doesn't have to take a timeout. That's great. I'm not going to discount the guy's grittiness. When I watched a player, I didn't see that I don't think he was a better center prospect than John Michael Schmitz or Joe Tippmann from last year. And those were both second round guys. I don't see him going in the first round. But, you know, people liking him in the, probably a top 40 pick. I think I have him as a 2-3 because I don't necessarily foresee that. Same thing with a couple of the other centers. But, you know, where Jackson Powers Johnson is concerned, I don't think he's a center only. I think he can play guard. But certainly having that position flex helps. But I think at the end of the day, I think people, this is every year, right? You go to the Senior Bowl and it's like, oh, this guy's amazing. But it's also the first time a lot of folks are seeing them up close and in person, right? You're watching tape, you're watching two dimensions. You see them, you see how they move, you see how they come off the ball, see how they block. And it's like, but at the same time, the other guys that, you know, underclassmen that are coming out where the talent level is a little bit higher, they're not there. It's all great senior prospects. But again, I think that there's something to be said for him being a first round pick. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't be shocked to see him in the second round. I also don't see that as being a fall because I think he's probably in a, you know, a 35 to 40 type player, but certainly can be pushed up based on the need. And then also based on where you're trying to put guys in from a positional standpoint. Because like we talked about it last time about the guards in this class, I think the two best guards are actually coming would be transitioning from tackle. And that's Fautanu and then Jordan Morgan. Mm-hmm. And I do think both of those guys can play tackle. But as far as like where guards are concerned, I think teams could look at them both at guards. And then you look at a Graham Barton or a Jackson Powers Johnson potentially playing those. But I think both of those guys probably are looking at it. Center Barton, maybe I've started to see more teams maybe looking at him as guard. But I think he's the best center prospect. And then Powers Johnson I have underneath.
Okay. All right. Well, one guy, and it's funny because Anderson Rogbar asked if there's a third round guard you see the Ravens that is a good fit. And so it's a perfect opportunity for me to bring up the guy that I mocked to the Ravens in our last show that me and Jimmy did. Is I mocked Christian Mahogany from Boston College there. And my only concern is, does he have, because the Ravens like to move their guards, they like to certainly pull them. Does he have the foot quickness? And then if you could answer Anderson's, if it's not Christian Mahogany, is there another third round guard that you like that's a fit for the Ravens?
Yeah, I think so. Like right now, like Mahogany is kind of my top pure guard, and I have him as a 2-3. So in that kind of probably late second, early third round. So kind of right there where you'd probably sit at your second round pick there at the end of the round, where you'd probably look at him. I think he probably ends up being a third round pick too. But no, I think he moves pretty well. I think that he has the size a little bit over Christian Haynes, who I saw you guys were looking at him as well during the mock draft too. I did like Mahogany better. And that's just me personally. I think he would be a good fit. I think he has that ability. And I think y'all talked about Puny,
Dominic Puny. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's another one there. He's obviously coming from a tackle slide too, but I think he does project at guard. There's a couple other guys that that have started to gain a little bit of steam. Brandon Coleman from TCU. I know Jim Nagy had posted about him, obviously a Senior Bowl guy, and him being a possibility maybe there in the third round at guard. We talked about obviously some of those tackles. I think Roger Rosengarten, he's at the Washington right tackle. People have kind of started to kind of liken him to being a guard prospect. And I think probably the second, third round is probably where he's going to live. But I think if you're looking at that range, Mahogany, Puny, Christian Haynes, Cooper Beebe is another one, which I had to go back because when I first looked at him, I just didn't see it. But his combine numbers were really, really good. And he's really just kind of a big, wide, you know, refrigerator there kind of type of guy. But he moves really well. You know, just based on the combine. So I did move him up into that second, third round range again, because I think he's probably going to go there. But then after that, You have a couple of the Michigan guards, and these are probably 3 to 4 round guys. And so usually these Michigan guys will play there for, you know, they're kind of like the Notre Dame tackles, where they're usually there for 3 to 4 years and they're getting a lot of snaps and playing a lot of games. And they're very, very solid. That's Zach Zinter, who has started to get some top 100 kind of love. And then Trevor Keegan, who's the other guard. So obviously coming from a run heavy offense there. Even somehow that gets your quarterback into the top 10. I don't know. But I think those two guys could be a possibility. You know, it depends on how much you like them, whether you go third round, or if you go fourth, because I know Zach Zinter, I think, would be a surefire one, but he's also coming off an injury. So, and then the one guy that I like that I think people are starting to come around to is, and again, I don't want to butcher his name, but I'm just going to try. And maybe Jimmy can share a little bit about this guy.
Utah guy, right?
Sataoa Lamea. Yeah.
I knew that's
what I like him. He's a right tackle, but man, very, very solid. And I think he would make a better guard. And I think in that third, fourth round range, I think people are going to start to create a little bit more buzz around him and maybe being a top 100 guy. So those are probably the ones that I see in that range. I think one guy that has kind of maybe some flex is Tanner Bordellini, who's a center prospect, but maybe he's a guard, but he showed out really well at the combine. So, I mean, that might be another possibility in that range, the guy with the center flexibility. But you have a good handful of names that are going to be in that range. I think you'd be happy with it. Hopefully it turns out, you know, may be better than some of the guys you've taken there in the last few years. That we kind of got into last week, and we just don't know what they are yet here a couple years into the league. So
who are you referring to?
You got, you know, Ben Cleveland.
Oh, you talking? Yeah. Yeah.
I really liked. And then Voorhees, who's, you know, we're penciling in as the starting guard and hasn't played a snap in NFL yet. And I know Jimmy,
yeah, got Jimmy went heated. Off. He went off and the comments lit him up about it. As you can expect, but yeah, Jimmy was passionate about saying, look, you can't count on that guy yet. Like,
right,
it'd be great, and I do have a lot of hopes for the guy. I think he's got potential, but yeah, you certainly can't just like erase that position and go, we're good.
One other name I'm seeing here in the chat, Casper 215, how about Mason McCormick, South Dakota State? I have him kind of also in that 3-4 range. I know like there's a couple people that maybe like him more than me, and I think that's purely just based on kind of the level of competition. I think he was at the Senior Bowl or Shrine Bowl, one of them, and played pretty well. So he's gotten some love from that as well. I'm not quite ready to put him for sure in the top three rounds, but certainly I wouldn't rule it out. I think that certainly is a possibility. I have him as a 3-4.
Wow, I appreciate you answering the chat, and then I have another one for you because it got a lot of talk in the chat, which surprisingly is Ladd McConkey. I think Ravens Win 16 was the first to mention the name, but then it really fired up the chat. So what's your take on him overall as a player, and would he be a fit for the Ravens?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's been really productive at Georgia. I think he's in that kind of, I'll say 2.5 tier of receivers, where the kind of that early second round range, good route runner, obviously the kind of sneaky athletic. I think y'all.
Here we go. Here we go.
But it actually has good speed. I would have to go back and look at the numbers. I've heard a little bit about the drops. But I have him right now as receiver number 8, and I kind of had considered moving him up to 7, and that would have put him right underneath the top 5 that we've talked about in Xavier Worthy, just because of the speed in terms of where I see these guys getting drafted.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, people liking Ladd. Does he have any injury issues?
He started to move up into the late first round in a lot of mocks. And oddly enough, before the Stephon Diggs trade, people were saying Buffalo and also Kansas City he's been linked to. I don't know how much smoke that is, or if it's just people think, hey, he'd be a good fit there, based on, you know, their own impressions of those teams. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's, I see him, you know, he's probably one of those, pick 30 to pick 40, not saying that would be a Ravens target. He might be, for all I know. But I think that's the range for him.
Got you. Okay. Now I'm curious about your opinion on this. Now, I know he's an edge, and I know we just, you know, with the Ravens signed Kyle Van Noy back, that maybe lessened the desperation at that position. But I think you mentioned there's still a chance they could still look to add there if the board falls how they want it to. Chop Robinson is, I think, giving a lot of Ravens fans a little bit too many flashes of Adafe Owe, and that he doesn't have a ton of production, but yet has, you know, kind of some freakish measurables from an athletic standpoint. What's your take on him as a player, and if he would be a fit and the right value at 30 if he falls?
Value, absolutely. Okay. I had to kind of stop myself from putting him as the top edge in this class. And that's only because of the production aspect. I think everything you want is there, and you hope that it comes together. So it is a projection. So I don't think he's as much as a project, but like the athletic ability, if you can harness that and let it go, I think people have said this, obviously they're making a connection with the Penn State, and I'm making it because see it every Sunday. The Micah Parsons comparison, I think, is very valid. He might be a tick underneath in terms of the athletic testing, but it's very, very close. And you see the explosion, but, you know, again, when you don't see it on the tape, you don't know how that projects to the league. But, like, the traits are definitely there, and I think he's probably – you know, I moved him ahead of Jared Verse, who a lot of people are saying is a top 10 type of pick from Florida State. Mm-hmm. He's bigger. He's been, you know, he's been kind of had first round buzz since last year when he ended up going back to school. But like for him, I saw a guy that's a little bit more stiff than I like. And I think Chop is a little bit more bendy, definitely a lot more explosive. It's something you got to see and come together in the league. But I think, going back to your mention of Owe, who I recall from the show we did that year, and then we came back to it, and somebody said that I said he was going to be the top pass rusher from that class, and I was like, I didn't even have him in my first round mock, so clearly not. I say that about Chop Robinson. I definitely think he could be the best pass rusher out of this, but it's got to come together. He's got to be brought along. If he goes to the right team, there's definitely that possibility. But I don't know how high he goes, but I've certainly heard from the people that a lot of folks listen to, like the Godfather himself, Mel Kiper, he started to hear him going higher than a lot of people have him right now. And I could see that. I could see him going in the teens if a team likes him. I mean, we think about last year, even the Jets come up and on the clock, and who are they going to take? And it's Will McDonald, who had kind of that same, you know, like traits, athletic ability, explosion. Mm-hmm. He had a good Senior Bowl. Chop obviously was not a Senior Bowl guy, but at the same time, like, Will McDonald was kind of in that late first, early second round, and he ended up going in the top 15, top 16 picks. So you could very much see a rise like that, I think, with Chop. You know, for most people, even myself, like, I have him kind of in that start. His range starts kind of about, I think, 26, 27, 28, kind of on paper. But it wouldn't surprise me to see him go in the top 20.
So if he does fall to 30, you think the Ravens take him?
I think they should if they want the pass rusher. If you're wiped out at tackle, and you know, and one of the functions of those tackles being wiped out is you might have a chance of the player you don't think would have been there. And I think Chop could be one of those guys. Okay. And I think if you hope you can, and, you know, maybe this comes with, you know, like what we've done with Owe so far, it hasn't reached the level we wanted it to. Mm-hmm. It might scare them. So they might say, let's go with, you know, somebody's a little more established. Let's go in a different direction. You don't know who's going to be. I do think, like, for example, if we're just talking pass rushers, I think for sure once you get to 30, Dallas Turner is gone. I think he's definitely going either top 10, certainly top 12, depending on, you know, if teams are moving up and down the board. Jared Verse, I think, probably goes in the top 20. Again, you know, that's just based on the size, the ability, and, you know, where teams want and value these pass rushers. The wild card is Leatu Atu from UCLA, who's had the medicals. He had the medical retirement from Washington, came back, played for UCLA. People say he's the best pass rusher in the draft, but like he may be off the board for teams having, you know, a history of neck injury, you know. So I don't know what to do with him. He could be top 10. He may not even go in the first round. That's a big window for him.
Does it kind of remind you, remember who's the guy who had all the concussions and he ended up going to the Dolphins and actually had a pretty good run? Jalen Phillips.
Yeah.
Yeah. People were scared because he was like medically retired from football, right?
Yeah. It was a very similar situation, but I think it was the concussions, but I think he's done pretty well. I think he might've been injured last year. Well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that
it was a big loss when he went out.
Yeah, it was the same kind of thing where like he had this huge window where he could have been top 10, top 15 type of player. And I think he went late in the first round, if I recall correctly. But yeah, it's the same kind of thing. It's like with these medicals, you never know because teams will red flag them and then, you know, they drop and drop and drop.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And then some guys don't get picked at all. Some guys get picked rounds later than you would have expected them to.
Well, I got a couple other names here, and I appreciate you spending so much time with us, Jason.
Of course.
Value your time, and I very much so appreciate it. But another Baltimore or Maryland native, the cornerback out of Oregon, Kyrie Jackson. Joshua Newman asks about him, and I did at one point, I think I had him mocked to the Ravens in one of my many, many mock drafts that I've done, because he surprisingly, in a lot of those, at least in the simulator I was using, he was available late. So what's your take on Kyrie Jackson? Would he be a fit here as well?
Yeah, he's starting to heat up. When I went back and looked at him, you know, like I moved him up to that kind of third, fourth round range. So like I know we talked about last time about the corner depth, and I think he's one of these guys that's going to start. You're going to start seeing him move up in that top 100 range. He's a long corner. So Dan Quinn may take him at number two for the Commanders.
Yeah, true.
You know, but I do think, you know, like I believe he started out at Alabama, and you know, this was pre-NIL, so I'm sure, you know, like he was very highly recruited coming in, but you know, like the length, the size, certainly, especially when you compare him to some of these other corners, you know, like your Nate Wiggins and, you know, your Rake Straw and those type of guys where the size is just not there. Like they're light. They don't have the sand in the pants, which I heard you guys enjoy that phrasing last show. But yeah, 6'3" in change, about roughly 6'4", 194. So very good size. He's got the length. Certainly got the pedigree if he's at Alabama and then at Oregon, which Oregon does have a history of putting DBs in the NFL more recently too. But yeah, I think third round, maybe in the second, depending on if you like him or not. I think more of a 3-4, but certainly trending more towards the 3 now. That teams are starting to again, I say teams, you know, they probably already up to speed on all these guys, but the media side is everybody's coming around to him. But I think, yeah, a bigger corner and certainly somebody that's starting to heat up.
No doubt. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool. Anytime I see a Maryland connection, you know, that certainly adds to it, and I'd like to see. But he's also just been available in a lot of those. So I like the size, that's for sure. Could he contribute and help out a team in September?
Yeah, I think he can. Okay. You know, I think he's that last group of guys. I mean, I won't say last group of guys. And you know, this is where I allegedly got myself into some trouble with the commenter and the other show talking about this cornerback class. It's not that this class doesn't have depth for contributions. It's just at the top,
you know, you usually have 7, 8, 9 guys that, you know, you're starting them right away and you feel good about that. This class, it, you know, some of these guys have some questions about them. And it does start at the top. You know, leading off this show, where do you play Cooper DeJean? Is he a corner? Is he a safety? Wiggins and Rakestraw, both lighter guys. Rakestraw's testing wasn't that good. You know, both, you know, going back to last year with Emmanuel Forbes, who ended up there with the Commanders and didn't have the best start. Is that an issue? Is having those lighter corners, you know, are they going to hold up? And, you know, I liked him as a prospect coming out, and maybe it's just a situation, you know, or maybe you just get to the league and it's different than playing the SEC. You know, that's the case too. And then you get picked on, but, you know, going through, I have, so, you know, again, at least on my rankings, you know, this is just me and, you know, where I kind of get my initial impressions and I start kind of formulating this together with the other, information that I consume. Like I have probably about 20 corners that are, you know, certainly worthy of the first 4 rounds. And I think every one of those guys can have a role, where you can lean on them in September to fill a spot, and they're not developmental guys that won't see the field or just play on special teams. They can actually come in and play some snaps for you.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to know, I know that everybody has their guy, like has either a group of guys or just maybe that one guy that go, everyone else is sleeping on this guy. Like, is there a guy in this draft? Because I know Cole has his guy and it seems like everyone does. Is there someone who you go, man, people are just they're just wrong about this guy and he should be in the top 3 rounds, but everyone else has him as a day 3 pick. Do you have a guy?
I mean, maybe not that stretch, but like Chop is definitely that guy for me. Like okay. I like Chop a lot more. Again, I have to kind of, I'm not ranking these guys based on how much they love him and saying Chop Robinson is the number one prospect. I just really like him. And I think, you know, like first round for sure. And I could see him going a lot higher than he probably does go, or maybe people are thinking about him. But again, that's a first round guy. We know about him. LaMea was my guy. Like I watched him and like where I saw him elsewhere was like 200s maybe, but I was like, this is a third round guard right here out of this right tackle from Utah. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to kind of one guy that I like a lot, which and I hadn't got a good read on him from external sources, is Brennan Jackson, who's an edge from Washington State.
Okay.
He really jumps off the tape, really athletic, really explosive. And I have him as like a 2-3. And I've seen a couple other people just kind of in like scouting report profiles, not necessarily like rankings that you find on your simulators and stuff like that. But that's a guy that you may just want to take a look at. Brennan Jackson, edge from Washington State. It's a guy that, like I said, that I really like and somebody that stands out for me. And I won't push him up too much because I just don't know if everybody's on him or if I'm missing something there. But from watching the tape, like that's a guy that I would like to get in the top 100.
Wow, Brennan Jackson. I see he's got the size that the Ravens look for, 6'4", 264.
If you want a good name, and I haven't seen anything about this guy, and I'd have to go back and look where, because he was kind of in my second. So I just put out the 2.0 of the board and the rankings and everything this week. This was a guy going back to edge. Let me find him here just so I see my designation right. Was a Shrine Bowl guy. Jamri Cromah, defensive end from James Madison.
Cromah?
Yes, K-R-O-M-A-H.
K-R-O-M. Man, they don't even have him listed in PFF's big board. Holy smokes. This is what I wanted. I wanted a deep pool, dude. So who is this guy? He's an edge? Okay.
He's an edge. Again, from James Madison. I found him kind of on my second watch. So when I went through my 1.0, I had all the combine guys. I had maybe 15 or so others of the non-combine invites who had started getting a little bit of buzz. So he was in my second watch, and I came across this guy, 6'3", 271,
just
big boy
built, you know, like and carries it well, but playing at James Madison, obviously a little bit lower level competition, but the physical tools are there. And you watch some of the tape and like, it does stand out. And I've got him as a four to six. Again, where I slap these guys is like, I'm trying to think about 32 teams and where they could see these players.
Yeah.
One team might see him as a fourth round. One might see him as a six. He might not even get drafted. It might be a priority free agent, but it's a guy that I really like. And sometimes I put these guys in here just to, you know, put it out there because it's like, I think there's attention worthy of that. Now people may not be looking at my stuff, but it's certainly there. And it's there as of, you know, April, you know, the 1st of April this week, as somebody that I've got higher than a lot of the names that you're going to see, higher in those edge rankings. So that's one guy that I'd like to draw some attention to.
I like that. I like that. I like the deep pull that they don't even have it on the big board at PFF. and a lot of times once it gets pretty low, they'll have the name, but they won't have any breakdown. They didn't even have the name for this guy. They're like, yeah, we don't even know who that guy is. but I know you always rank, what is it? The top 150 and is it the 150 that you rank?
Top 100. And then on the board, like this next round of the board, as I finished up, it was 460. But as far as like actually, so I don't rank all 460 because one, they're specialists. I don't watch kickers and punters. I put the names on there that went to the Senior Bowl and long snappers and that sort of thing, just so that on their board. So if they get drafted, like I can check them off. And then I also don't rank any players that I put in as late round draftable, which I've kind of qualified this year in my head is like, if they're not going to get drafted, I don't think before the sixth round. So it'll be six, seven, maybe priority free agents, maybe just undrafted, right? They might be guys that get a camp invite and they're just a camp body for all I know. But they are having attention somewhere, whether they went to the Hula Bowl, whether they're somebody that was at a pro day that just showed out and had some kind of trait that's going to attract the team. It's like, let's give that guy a shot and see what he's got. So that would leave me ranking in the positional rankings, 314 is the number that I have now across all the positions. But as far as like actually like where I really focus is the top 100 because you do get scored on that with the huddle report.
Gotcha. And then last one I have for you, and the reason I have I'm bringing this, and it's really thanks to BP who I believe brought this name up originally. I think it was BP. If I'm wrong, I apologize. But Isaac. Is it Guarendo, the running back out of Louisville? Because the Ravens have an uncanny ability, even if they don't draft a guy, to find these running backs either in the late rounds or as an undrafted free agent. And they've hit it out of the park. And I know that a lot of teams probably feel that they can add running back depth using the late rounds or even undrafted, but it just seems like the Ravens have really nailed it lately. What's your thoughts on Isaac Guarendo out of Louisville?
Yeah, bigger back, 6 foot, 221 at the combine. He ran in the 4.3s, track background.
Wow.
So kind of your bigger, more powerful back. I think it takes him a little bit of runway. So you may liken him a little, you know, I'm not making the comparison, but I'm liking just in terms of a trait of players have. You've kind of seen people say that about Derrick Henry, right? Mm-hmm. So it might be a natural transition to have a player like that behind him. Once he does get going, like he's got the juice and he's also got the power to get through teams. So I have him as a 4-6. I think from the size, you know, height, weight, speed type of, you know, evaluation, I think just based on that, he certainly get drafted, but I could see, you know, the right team could like him and maybe get him in the fourth round, but you know, he could go higher than that, go lower than that. You know, you could see him sneak into the third if there's a run. I don't know. I don't have him that high amongst the top handful of backs, but I do have him kind of in that next tier below, which starts kind of that early day three range, stretching into the six, depending, again, with the backs you don't know. We have some smaller backs. We have the change of pace backs. We have a couple of guys that, you know, have a whole lot of carries, you know, like a Blake Corum from Michigan, Ray Davis from Kentucky, these type of guys that are kind of those middle round guys you can plug in and be comfortable with as a you know, RB2 maybe, spot, you know, spot starter if you need it. But yeah, Guarendo is probably in that kind of group there where starting on day three is that'd be a player to watch.
Okay, yeah, a lot of people liking Guarendo. I love it, including Blackula 88, who's says he's going to be a steal. Jason, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Let me throw you one other running back. Another guy that I like. So, like, when I board these guys on this second round, I'm like, you know, usually it's like, you know, maybe they're later in the Shrine Bowl. They're not combine invites. One guy that I liked on tape, and then I saw that he performed pretty well at his pro day, and is one of only a handful of 4 to 6s. Like, I don't have anybody that's going to, you know, stretch into maybe the third round. But Blake Watson from Memphis. Memphis has a history of putting out some productive backs in the NFL. You know, from my own history, Tony Pollard at the Cowboys. You have who was the guy with the Rams for a while, Daryl Henderson, Kenneth Gainwell with the Eagles. So these guys come out. The one thing that makes them attractive is they're usually kind of runner receiver types. So they do get put out in formation to catch the ball. Good coming out of the backfield. So they usually make good middle round picks because there's a lot of value to that. So Blake Watson from Memphis, I think starting in the fourth round, that's another guy you could take a look at if that particular skill set is attractive to you.
I like it. Since she gave us one more, Dylan Laub. Dylan Laub, I see mentioned multiple times. What about Dylan Laub, running back? What do you think?
Dylan Laub, New Hampshire. Yeah. So another one of these guys, I think he had like a 275-yard receiving game off of like 13 catches. So
that's crazy.
But good runner, like well-built prospect. You know, I think he's probably a later round guy. I have him as a 5 to 7, which would be, you know, obviously what those are, but certainly could, you know, if he slipped into be undrafted, I'm sure he's a guy that's going to get a lot of attention. But yeah, he's won't call him a sleeper prospect because, you know, he is known and has been kind of talked about a little bit. And I'm going to look here just to make sure I speak to where he was at. Yeah. So he was a Senior Bowl guy. So, you know, I know that stuff gets thrown around a lot on Twitter and like a sleeper. It's like, he's not really a sleeper if he's at the Senior Bowl, in my
That's
opinion.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
You know, I find
everyone saw him. Yeah.
You know, and maybe I have higher standards for that, where if you're at the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl, or even now the Hula Bowl, you're not really a sleeper. You're some guy that gets found in a pro day, you know.
That's right.
Or played somewhere where they have the draft what show that I watched from the Cowboys. Yeah.
What was that guy you hit me with earlier that didn't have a profile on PFF?
Oh, Jamre Cromaw.
Oh, my God.
Jamre Cromaw.
Okay. I like it. I'm going to keep an eye on Chroma as the next year unfolds to see, and also the draft, just to see where does this guy end up getting taken.
And if somebody who just wants to be very literal about the things that I'm saying, I'm not saying the guy's getting drafted in the fourth round.
That's right.
I think he has the ability to get drafted there, but if he's a free agent, hey,
I love that you read the comments. I love that it's obvious that you read the comments.
I only read it because you guys mentioned it on the last show. and after you know, post-draft last year when Jimmy was talking his smack about whoever it was, and he was like, and even DraftFlex didn't have that or whatever. I was like, no, man, come on. So I've started tuning in a little
I love
bit.
It.
Just,
I love
you
it.
Know,
keep them,
you
know, receipts,
I had
Jason.
Out of mind. It's all in good fun. But it's good because I like to, you know, when I come on the show, I want to know what you guys have been talking about so that, you know, there's a good continuity of the information that I can share. And if it's something you guys have talked about and certainly put value in to actually have discussion about, like, I want to be able to contribute that in the way that I can coming on the show.
I certainly appreciate it. You are the man, Jason. If you guys have not already done so, go check out DraftPlex. He will simply make you smarter when it comes to the NFL draft, and he's certainly done that every time he comes on here. Jason, can't thank you enough. Appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll be talking soon.
Absolutely, sir. Whenever you need it.
My man. Take care, buddy. Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Yeah, so, I mean, as always, Jason brings just a ridiculous wealth of knowledge. Like, I mean, that many players. Look, I like to watch film on these guys. And if I didn't have, you know, if I had more time, I would love to watch film on all these guys. But I'm so thankful for Jason for, you know, taking the time to do it and giving us all that knowledge in a way where we don't have to watch all that tape like Jason does. So we certainly appreciate it. But that's going to be it for us tonight. We will certainly be back in the not too distant future. Hopefully Jimmy will be able to make it out to the next one. But if not, I'll be here regardless. But that's it for us tonight, and we'll see you guys soon.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.